Welcome to the Occupational Safety Leadership Podcast, episode number 22. In this episode, we will continue the OSHA Voluntary Protection Program, hazard prevention and control aspect, and this is going to be a part two. This is a continuation of episode 21, which would have been way too long if I kept talking. So let's get into episode 22. We're going to go over a couple of examples. Please keep in mind that these are examples that work great for me, and it doesn't mean that it's going to be great for you. Always think outside the box and come up with your own stuff that works for you. Let's get started. So we covered a lot in part one. So part two picks up about halfway through the hazard prevention and control. And the first thing they ask you is to explain your occupational healthcare program. So in this is where I've described the first aid and CPR, any measures that we take, AEDs and where they're found in the various locations, who gets the training on all these aspects, local hospitals. We have two fantastic hospitals. One of them is just the everyday hospital, and that's where we plan. If, of course, we have an injury, where most of them go, but one hospital we send to for any chemical contamination, because they really know their stuff there, since it's in a very chemical intensive part of Maryland, as opposed to the other one, which is a nice suburban hospital. So we discuss the local hospitals, what they can and they can't do. It would be awesome if they could always meet our needs at all times, regardless of where a person went, but that doesn't always happen. And we also talk about special protocols that we have. So we do have hydrofluoric acid, which is a calcium seeker. So what we have is calcium gluconate, which we put on the hydrofluoric acid area. And it does a really good job of binding to the hydrofluoric acid. And the person still has to go for a follow-up treatment, of course. But this does a really good job of making sure that you're not having a hydrofluoric acid issue. Let's continue on a little bit more on part two, preventive and predictive maintenance program there. They want you to describe the maintenance performed on the equipment and the different intervals. For us, we're very chemical and machine intensive, so we do a weekly, monthly, and an annual inspection. Most of the things we do, if it's really small, it's weekly. Some things don't need a weekly and they're just going to need a monthly, but like all things, we do an annual, and I think that we do a pretty good job in getting this equipment when it's not being used, so that people don't feel the pressure of I have to hurry up and get it back up and running. And we've done a reasonable job on the predictive maintenance. It may say you take the machine out of service every 5,000 hours, rebuild the motor, rebuild. And I think we do a pretty good job on that. With COVID, we have had a hard time getting parts for certain things. So there are things that we had to push out the predictive maintenance and worry about preventive maintenance only. Next, they want to know about the tracking of hazard corrections and kind of how the hazards are found, and then once they're found, well, how do you go back and correct them? The one thing that I've tried to push that's really worked out good for a lot of places I worked is that the person who finds it fixes it. If they can't find it and fix it, they get the supervisor, they get me, they get somebody else. Some things are super easy. You can stick it on a list. If it's too hard and maybe you need to get some money, come up with a plan, whatever the issue is out there. But I have found that if people feel the power of, I found this, I'm going to go ahead there and tackle it, it really helps them to feel they're part of the problem, as opposed to, I send an email to a supervisor, now the monkey is on the supervisor's back. I feel really good because the hazard is still there. When the hazards are found, do you put interim actions in place until a permanent corrective action can be found? And when we also think about how the hazards are found, are you finding them on a programmed inspection? If that's a month, a week, whatever the program is, or is it just as you happen to be walking through? Because all of us as safety professionals, as we walk from point A to point B, we're actually doing a safety inspection. You know, we want our people to find it. We want our people to tackle it because then they really have the buy-in. But when we find it, we got to tackle it too. You know, we just can't walk by and then I'll send the email to Joe. And Joe, of course, will or won't fix it because he'll just send the email to Fred. And then Fred will or won't fix it then. So as safety professionals, every time we walk through an area, we're also doing an inspection. Let's look at the last bit of it. They talk about emergency preparedness. So they would like you to sit down and talk about not just your engineering controls, but what are the common hazards you've already planned for out there, you know? So with fire, they want to know about your sprinkler systems. Do you have pull stations? Do you have incipient smoke detection in there? Gas evacuation, are you having a gas evacuation from natural gas? Is it that's feeding the boiler? Are you also monitoring the atmosphere for oxygen deficiency? Is there any other toxics in the area, hydrochloric acid or other types of atmospheric air monitoring? Do you have any spill cables? So I think these are fantastic investments. You can find these spill cables, and for me, they're actually very cheap. And when they sense some form of liquid, it would be awesome if they would tell you exactly what the liquid was. But it just says liquid leak at 119 feet. So you look at your map, you just walk 119 feet, and then you find exactly where the spill is. Now you have to figure out what did spill on it. Was it water? Was it a chemical? You know, like, what was the issue there? Shelter in place. Do you have to worry about chemical accidents from other facilities? And you may have to shelter in place. Or do you only have to really shelter in place if there's a tornado, hurricane, or some kind of weather event where we're asking people, don't leave the buildings because it's actually worse outside than inside. They also want to know about medical response. So all of us are getting older. I like to think I'm getting more handsome and better, but I also know that I'm dragging my own personal medical issues into the workplace too. So you can't have a medical issue in the workplace that literally has nothing to do with work. You know, they're still part of our family, part of our workforce. We're going to do everything we can to help them out, to get them exactly what they need back up on their feet. So they want you to really describe what you would do just for a medical response then. So, and that will wrap it up for episode number 22, the OSHA Voluntary Protection Program. And this is where we talked about the second part of hazard prevention and control. Episode 23, we'll talk about the last part of the voluntary protection program, which is the safety and health training aspect. So I want to thank everybody for joining me today. My name is Dr. David Ayers. Have a safe day.